Manahan, thank you for joining me for the 237th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. My guest today is Antonio Hasha of Gray, Maine. He is a world-traveling storyteller and mime who was born in Melesama, Brazil, raised in Niterói, and then studied the performance of mime at the political theater program in Natal, Brazil. As Juliana Bean spoke about in her interview on New Mainers Speak, Natal is a sister city to Maine through Partners of the Americas. And that's the link. That's how Antonio found his way to Portland, Maine in 1986 to study mime with Tony Montanaro. You can see Antonio's image and performed stories on his beautiful website, storyinmotion.com. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Antonio.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Kate.
You are a professional performer, and I wondered if you could tell us what kind of audiences you attract.
What kind of audiences I go to? It's better put than attract. But I perform from the age in which people can sit and listen for about 30 to 45 minutes to the age of people who can still sit and listen for, you know, 30 to 45 minutes. So I go from very young to old age. I perform a lot in schools and festivals, both festivals across North America, mostly the U.S., and also abroad. Some of these festivals are under huge tents with 2,000 people packed under them. Some are in beautiful opera houses and theaters, museums and art galleries, to a school auditorium. And if I'm gigging at a school, chances are I'm under the basketball hoop in a gymnasium. So a lot of the times, I'm not very picky about the physical aesthetic space. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a gym. It doesn't matter if it's an opera house. I mean, playing in opera houses in Europe, it's a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. If people can sit and listen, then we can have a show. If people are selling popcorn in the background and there are kids running around and yelling, then forget about it. It's not going to come through.
Yeah, you're looking for that deeper connection to the listener. You're transforming this stuff in your head and sending it to them.
Yes, exactly. Through words and movement. And if they don't get the image created in their heads, then it's not working. The connection is not working, you know? It's like trying to talk on the phone without a phone connection.
Yeah. I saw that you performed at Wolf Trap, and that's where I went as a little girl. And I have so many really exciting memories about sitting on the hill and watching the performers on Saturday mornings. I can picture you there doing your performance of storytelling and mime. And I've had the joy of watching some of those on your YouTube channel and on your website. Wondered if you could describe for listeners what some of your performances entail.
The performances entail various things. In any set, it doesn't matter the length of the set. I will always do a verbal story mixed in with something silent. And so mime is the art of gesture and movement in story, in a narrative. So it's the art of making the invisible visible. Through movement, you convey a narrative to the audience through movement. It has nothing to do with a white face or white gloves or striped shirt and suspenders. That's okay if people want to do that, but the essence of mime is simply, and that's where the richness of it lies, is the ability to transfer a narrative into the imagination of the observer through movement and gesture. That was my first hook in the performing arts. You know, I saw mime on television when I was 13 years old, lived in Brazil at the time, And I never forgot that performance. And I was fascinated with the ability of the performer, the mind performer, to turn an empty space into a three-dimensional real space through movement. And so I got, so that's how I got started. So that there's always that in my performance. And when I'm speaking, and again, for the listener, I want to explain, I'm not a mime who speaks. I'm a performer who does various areas of the performing arts and mix them. So if I'm doing a mime piece, I'm not speaking in the mime piece. But I often, when I'm telling a story verbally, I do use mime techniques in the story. And how does that happen? If the story has an animal, I will portray the animal physically using mime and techniques, movement techniques, to become the animal physically while I'm speaking in the animal's voice in first person. You know, so my tone of voice will change, my posture will change, and I'll turn into that character, and I'll speak because it's a story, a verbal story. So in a dialogue between two human characters, for example, you know, I will assume the posture. If I'm playing a king, I assume the posture. If the king is holding a staff, it will be an invisible staff, and I'll mime the staff holding onto it and create the illusion that there is something solid that I'm holding onto. And I'll address the story through the voice of the king, and so forth and so on. So there's acting, there's mime, there's sound effects. You know, I'll do, so that would be the beginning of a wild cat, you know, before.
That is so effective and comes through so well in your performances that are online. I was thinking there was going to be a wild cat jumping out of the jungle out of nothing. You know, you're on a black backdrop wearing a black outfit. It's terrific, yeah, how you bring that to life.
Thank you. So the bottom line is I use my instrument, which is my body, and all that comes with it, you know, voice, you know, where I look. I'm very strict about where my eyes go when I'm telling, because they create the illusion of the ambiance, of the atmosphere. And that comes from mime training, because a mime, if you look somewhere that has nothing to do with the narrative, the audience will get confused. Why is he looking that way? Wherever you look in a mime piece, it has to be connected with the narrative. So that mime training really served me well when I started to tell stories, because everything I do on stage belongs to the story. I cater to the listeners. If it's a group of second graders and third graders, I'm gonna reach my repertoire, which has hours and hours of materials, and I'll reach in there for something that it's suitable for them. It's entertaining and educational. And I try out to promote diversity and world culture and geography. And I always do a little vignette that is silent. Sometimes it's a 1 minute long mind piece of the life cycle of a butterfly. It could be, you know, I end all my performances blowing a huge invisible balloon, and I float away with the balloon and have people talk for hours afterward whether I really floated away or if it was...
I saw that at the end of your TED talk, and I was like, okay, he is the real thing. That is so wonderful.
Thanks.
See, I know you've been doing a lot of traveling for your work. Last fall, you were on 36 flights, dipping down into communities all over the world. And then there was this opportunity to reinvent yourself called COVID. We don't really have control of the future, but we do have choices about how we want to respond to our situation in the present. And I was wondering, how are you experiencing this global pandemic professionally as a performer?
Yeah, that's a good question. And what you said in the question makes complete sense. And I try to live my life like that as much as I can. We don't have control over the future. The secret of a well-lived life is how you live your day-to-day existence while briefly going through this experience of being on earth. So there's a certain identity thing that you can easily get lost in. The ego wants to say you're a mime, you're a storyteller, your job is to be in front of people, and now you've been robbed of that. So who are you? And so there's that existence of being connected to an identity, which is your career. And that's not your identity. Your identity is being a human. You know, I have the identity of a father, of a husband, of a citizen, of a human, and I do what I do. So the COVID kind of shook me a little bit. It was a progressive thing. You know, first the spring went up, disappeared. And I said, oh, but summer, I have still gigs in the summer. This will be gone by the summer. You know, people did not know. We're very like misinformed of the potency of this virus. And all of a sudden, by the time summer came, my whole year was thrown out the window. And it went to next, most of it went to next year, which is like, hey, I have a full year of 2021. But we don't know that. You know, as Anthony Hopkins says in a recent video I watched, he said, the future is potential. The life happens in the now. And I love that because I've been a follower of Eckhart Tolle, who wrote The Power of Now. And it's so true. You know, I tell kids, today is yesterday's future. And when we wake up tomorrow, we're not going to call it tomorrow. We're going to call it a today. So life really happens today. So what can we do today that goes with the flow? So I started to do contents for my YouTube channel. I started to take workshops on how to operate Zoom and different platforms. And I started to do shows on Zoom. And I'm having, you know, I'm not doing as many shows as I used to do, but I am having a blast with all the things that you can do on video that you can't get away by doing them on stage. So there are certain things that I add on to my performance. Like the other day, I was telling a performance and there was a lot of splashing. There was this crocodile splashing in a well trying to eat meat. And I had a tray with water off camera. And I hit it through the water on my face. And it added that three-dimensional feeling to the... added this visceral, you know, thing of the water, because it's something that I watched when I was a kid, you know, the water flying at me from the alligator. But anyway.
You're adapting. Is the YouTube channel the same as the Treehouse Storytelling?
Yeah. If you Google Antonio Rocha Storyteller channel, I think you'll find it.
Okay. And Rocha is R-O-C-H-A.
Yes, R-O-C-H-A, Rocha. It's Portuguese, not Spanish.
So you've gone virtual. You're doing schools and libraries.
Yes, I went online. I've done like about 6 in-person shows, though, this summer for kids.
Oh, really? At a distance?
At a distance, you know, the kids sit inside of hula hoops and they wear their poop masks. And I stay far away, so I don't have to wear a mask. You know, it's outdoors, and I stay far away enough. And I compliment them on their masks. And now I find, you know, it's very cute, you know, good for you. I kind of pump them up so they don't feel strange to wear something that they are not used to. And I entertain them, and they have a great time. And when they are laughing and smiling, you can see the smile in their eyes. You know, you just go with the flow.
That's beautiful, actually.
Yeah, so I kind of went virtual. Is that what I ultimately want to do forever? No, I want to be in front of audiences. So, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a renaissance after we get control of this pandemic, and things will go back to mostly how they were before. I don't think things will ever go back to the way they were before.
Are we going to lose the handshake in the process?
I don't think so. I think the handshake is going to come back. But what I'm saying is everything that happens to us has an ability to transform us and makes us into a better species than we were before. So when I say we're not going to go back to how it used to be before, meaning I think we're going to become better humans. I think there's hope I can only have hope. You know, I can't just go living that everything's going to be obliterated. Kindness is important, and it's vital to a healthy living. And I think that hopefully we'll become a more kinder species.
You know, you find a way to bring levity to children in the middle of a COVID summer. I just love that image of them sitting in hula hoops. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Antonio Hasha. He was born and raised in Brazil, came to the United States. Now he's a Mainer, an American, a father, a husband, and a friend to many, as well as being a professional storyteller and mime. Perhaps you've caught him at the TEDx Dirigo talk or on stage around the state. He joins me today by Zoom from his home in Gray, Maine. You were telling me on our phone call earlier that you have a special joke that you sometimes open shows with about your triple threat. I wondered if you could share that with us.
The triple threat, yes. I start usually my adult shows. When I say adult, there's no inappropriate language, actually. It's just the stories are more complicated and complex. Yeah, as I say, I'm a walking issue. I'm a triple threat. I'm an immigrant, I am African descent, and I'm a Latino. But I came to this country, I didn't want to steal anybody's job, so I chose to be a mime and a storyteller. And people laugh, and I have them. I say, because, you know, public speaking, a lot of people would rather die than do public speaking. And be a mime, you know, it's so many times ridiculed by so many. And here I found my flow with the nonverbal. And the nonverbal gave me a voice in the verbal. Which
mime led you to the storytelling.
Mime led me to the storytelling, and the storytelling I do without the mime, I don't think I would be having this conversation with you right now. What really made me flow, and I got a lot of bookings when I start to get the right exposure in various festivals around the country, was the fact that I blended, fused in a seamless way, the movement nonverbal with the verbal. When I wanted to be a mime and I told my parents, they were tickled by it, but they never judged it because they've always had this thing, you know, be happy and be kind.
That's a powerful message. It's take care of yourself and take care of others.
Yeah.
Nice. They really wanted you to reach inside and find what made you come alive.
Right.
I think your kindness and your awareness of children's needs makes you an ideal performer for children. And you've spoken to the fact that you try to bring a multicultural angle to your work. And then I think by welcoming audiences and telling them you're Afro-Latin descent, you know, you're really saying, I'm from all over the world and I'm like you. I wonder how being of Afro-Latin descent has impacted your experiences of the Black Lives Matter movement.
I've been very aware of the movement even before the movement was installed and became a three-dimensional breathing movement. I'm of African descent, and prejudice has always been part of my upbringing, even in Brazil. You know, a lot of people think Brazil is this, you know, happy-go-lucky country, tropical country with a melting pot, and there's a lot of racism in Brazil. And right now, especially it's really coming to the surface now because of the kind of leadership we have down there. I had a mixed race father. He was Portuguese and African descent, born and raised in Brazil. And my mom was the whitest and shortest woman in the family of Portuguese and Swiss German descent. So I'm really like a big salad of cultures. So I've been always aware of that. And the movement never ceased here, coming to the U.S., you know, seeing what happened to the Africans that were brought here enslaved, to how the system kept robbing most from succeeding through all the years, and then the civil rights movement. And then you notice, you know, that certain laws don't apply to to one but applies to the other, you know, and then the violence, the needless violence, you know, completely outrageous, gratuitous violence based on a fear that if we all sat together and talked about, you know, it wouldn't exist. I do believe that if people sat and talked about what their fears are, what their insecurities are, that we'll be able to coexist in a much better way. But unfortunately, there are people who not only think they're superior, but their superiority is also, I believe, hidden behind a sense of insecurity. You know, I think that every human being, once they start putting themselves above someone else, they're trying to hide behind something. There's something that they haven't worked out yet. And I think a lot of racism and prejudice comes from that. So as a Black person, I have African features. I'm not super Black, but I have African features. I am very aware of it, and I've suffered prejudice from people. I've noticed people standing farther away from me than they needed to before COVID hit. And it kind of, a lot of it goes over my head. You know, I've had people call the police on me because it's one of my TEDx talks. You know, I was walking with my daughter and a dog, and somebody said I was suspicious and called the police. So in my own neighborhood, where I lived a long time ago, not now, not here.
Laugh, but that's heartbreaking.
It is. I laugh out of the ridiculousness of the situation. Yes, it is heartbreaking. And I was very lucky that the police was very kind. Actually, they responded only on the third phone call. The person called the police three times. I was walking to the end of the street and back. So they saw me a couple of times and thought I was going to wreck something with my two-year-old in the backpack and my dog on the leash. And I laugh, and I don't want to make something light out of this because worse things happen. And so I'm not making light. For those listening, I'm not making light of this. But what I'm laughing is just the ridiculousness and the level of fear that ignorance can wire in your brain. You know, here's this person in the house fearing somebody. And the level of fear is so great that, you know, it's almost like I have pity for the person who did it. Can you imagine living a life like that? You know, they're building a wall around themselves based on this fear.
Do you have thoughts about how we could do better? Like, how does a community address that kind of fear that the caller had about you? How does a community address people standing too far apart before COVID, right? You know, adjusted for reality now. How do we get better?
I have a feeling, as a storyteller, I've seen how story can transform. I even wrote a saying that goes, stories beget understanding, understanding begets respect, respect begets justice. Justice begets peace. That's the power of story, right? It has been printed in birthday calendars and books, and I used in some of the stories. So once you know somebody's story, once you understand where you come from, the fear can go away. The more isolated you are, the more you lock yourself in your house and you fear, the more that giant grows in your head, right? So first of all, there's no race. There's a species called the human species. And we have different looks because we inhabit the whole planet. So because we inhabit the whole planet, we've developed different tones of skins and different types of eyes and different types of speech because of the different parts of the planet we inhabit.
You're a good person to recognize the different people all over the globe because you've traveled so much. If people want to learn more about your work as it evolves to meet today's world, where can they find you?
They can find me on my website, which is www.storyinmotion. story like storytelling, N-I-N, motion like in movement, motion.com.
Okay. A great place if you want to see images of Antonio or watch some of his storytelling and find out where he's going to be on his calendar. Antonio, you are beautifully sensitive to the world around you. You see gestures, audiences, accents, things in nature, and you interpret all of that for us to see more clearly. Thank you so much for taking your time to be my guest today.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure, Kate. Thank you as well.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Antonio has selected for us. Can you tell us why you chose this song?
It's something I'm still trying to find out. There is a sequence of notes and a crescendo, and it just fills my heart when I listen to Pavarotti singing Nessu Dorma. You know, it's just really touching.
Scioglierai le silenzio che ti